Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest sports columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing.
No, you ain't.
He ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interview.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interview. I know. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM ESPN. A special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday to you wherever you may be. As the introduction suggests, my name is indeed Jeffrey Wright. Let's tell you what's coming up here on the program. Jeff Calkins is going to join us momentarily via the phone. Look forward to speaking with Jeff about 9:25. Jason Smith's going to roll in here. We'll talk with Jason about Tiger basketball and more. Chris Harrington will join us as he does each and every day at 10 o'clock. Let's not waste any more time. Let's bring on the man that lends his name to the program. He, of course, is Jeff Calkins at Jeff_Calkins on Twitter. Jeff, good day, sir. How are you?
I think it's as miserable in Ohio as it is in Memphis. I gather it's pretty miserable in Memphis.
Yeah, you know how I think spring's overrated. Today would be the postcard day, or like the first thing I would present in my case.
What is your argument on behalf of spring being overrated?
Spring has the best PR team in the business, because anytime you think of spring, it's always they've created this mental image of nothing but 75 and sunny, lilies, flowers everywhere, everything's blooming, when in reality it just dumps rain on us. I haven't breathed through my nose probably since October. The allergies, the pollen, everything, and it just goes from 75 degrees one day, and then it rains for six, and then the temperature changes are just glaring and shocking. It's just wildly overrated.
Is it? Rank them for me, the season, if you would.
For us, or because like the, what makes it difficult is, are we counting like that 2 weeks of fall that we get? Because that's pretty great.
Well, the question is, are you counting what happens? In other words, are you counting football as part of fall? Or are we just isolating the seasons independently?
Yes, I'm isolating the seasons independently, because I think if you include the sports calendar, for me, it has to be.
Or if you include Christmas as part of winter, right? For
correct.
Example, do you give it? Are you giving it the whole thing? We're just talking about the weather.
Yeah, I'm trying to separate emotional connections that we make with the seasons, and just rank them based upon how miserable they are.
Okay, let's just do that. And you can, however you want to define fall, you can define fall. So go.
Okay, in terms of misery index.
Or happiness. It doesn't have to be misery. It's which is the best in order.
The best in order. Fall is the best, because you get the fall. When we have fall, as it's actually constructed, fall
is... That's like saying when we have spring as it's actually constructed. If spring doesn't really consist of if spring is only defined by the beautiful spring days that we had earlier this week, then you'd put spring higher.
No, because the allergies are not nearly as bad. Anyone that has anything remotely...
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you have to take what is actually happening in Memphis in the fall.
Correct.
Not just the best fall week. So fall in Memphis includes 98 degree days when you're like, what the hell? I'm done with this.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
We're moving on. Where is fall?
Yep.
That is part of fall.
Yep.
So if you can you
give
can
me that,
fall one if you
because
want,
you know what, Jeff, you know what's one of the most life's most simple pleasures? A sneaky short day. You know what? I didn't think I was going to get to wear shorts today, but boom, I'm letting you see my calves.
So okay, rank the seasons based on which is best.
Fall, summer, spring, winter.
Well, that's the thing. So you're trashing spring, which is fine.
Correct.
But there is nothing redemptive about a Memphis winter.
No, I completely agree with you. But that's a gift. Yeah. Like to me, like that's just. Like, that is just moving on. My bigger point on spring is massively overrated.
I guess here's the point I'm getting to you. I don't think this is a sad thing to say because I love Memphis, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you're saying spring is overrated, I think it's still the best because I think all the seasons in Memphis are miserable. I actually think we don't have good seasons because here's the. Let me tell you. I am walking on sunshine. I am Mr. Positivity.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But if you stop and think about it for a moment, winter is. You're so done with winter that you don't even want to discuss it because there's nothing good about a Memphis winter. It doesn't even have the. Here's the best thing about a Memphis winter. If you hate snow and whatever, it's not bad in that regard, right?
Sure.
But it doesn't have anything positive going for it. It's cold, miserable. It doesn't have lovely, fluffy snow days, really.
Yes.
It's just
40 and raining. It's 40 and raining.
A Memphis winter's terrible.
Yes.
Now, a Memphis fall, as falls go, pretty bad because they don't have – Memphis falls don't have that crisp snap in the air,
yeah,
leaves turning gorgeousness of a – New England fall, right?
We have foliage, but yes, we do not get that crisp. We don't get that crisp transition from summer to winter that you are referring
to. No, we don't have great falls. Spring, you say, well, I'll get to spring in a moment. Summer's soakingly hot and disastrous.
Yeah, but the golf ball travels farther, and it's not cold.
And as you point out, spring, I actually think spring is one. I go spring, summer. Fall pisses me off because it doesn't ever arrive.
Like, right, because you're the guy that
like
you've tasted.
It's like waiting on your waiter to bring you, your server to bring you a check that just, and your server just keeps ignoring you. Like,
yes.
Fall is like, come on, man, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so
are you going to wish death upon fall? Like Gary did that waiter?
I'm going to follow the Gary Parrish show and wish death upon fall. And so to me, I gotta go spring best. You say it's overrated, and I see your point. But I don't suffer from allergies, and I'm not an empathetic fellow, so I don't really care about your allergies.
Yes.
And B, it's better than the other three.
And that's the most important point that you make. You do not suffer from allergies. I have, like, you know how, like, they'll release, like, those pollen charts, and then occasionally you'll see those lists of, if you have allergies, where is the worst place to live? I basically live, for me, I live in the epicenter of where would be the worst place. The place that provides me the most misery in terms of allergies. Like, I, Jeff, legitimately have not breathed through my nose basically since November.
You know, the best place to live is Memphis because this Saturday,
yes,
at Robert Irwin Jewelers,
dadgum right.
Go, if you just show up. And it's spring, so you have to admit, you just show up.
Ring by spring, baby.
Between 11 and 12, everything in their Diamond Showroom, it's the store on Perkins Extended, is 60% off. That is brand name watches. That is engagement rings. Go ahead. You might as well get – listen, if you're going to have a beautiful, wonderful engagement moment, it might as well be 60% off.
Absolutely.
That includes designer jewelry, everything. They do this once a year at each store, and this time it's at their Diamond Showroom on Perkins Extended. But the key is, you can stay in the shop as long as you want, but you got to be there between 11 and 12 o'clock tomorrow. Okay, having trashed Memphis's spring, I'm going to do some college stuff here in a little bit, but I have some very important questions to ask you.
Okay.
The first one is this. I wasn't there for all of yesterday and didn't hear all the back and forth. fundamentally, are people happy with the Grizzlies front office or not? In fact, let's make this a poll.
Okay.
We're going to make this a poll.
All right.
Given the events of yesterday.
Yes.
Given the additions of yesterday.
Yes.
Are you optimistic about the Grizzlies front office? And what we are going to there's not going to be a whole variety of choices here. There's going to be two. Yes or no.
This is like a referendum.
This is just, yes, it's an up or down vote. Yeah, it's an up or down. It's not a ranking of spring. It's an up or down. Given the yes, are you optimistic about the Grizzlies front office or happy, whatever you want to phrase it? Yes or no? And I would say, what will people vote?
I think initially there was the eye roll. This is what I discussed with Brad on the show yesterday after we had spoken with you. It feels like because of how quickly the Grizzlies sank, that now there's just this anytime the Grizzlies do anything that there is an eye roll. And
I agree completely. Like you shouldn't have rolled your eyes at what happened yesterday. Like,
no, and
but now we just roll our eyes at anything they do. Yeah, that's a very good point. So how are people going to vote?
I do think yesterday there was a little shifting, but I still think if you made me guess, I'm going to say like 55-45 no.
I think it's going to be really close. I agree with you. But I think people, here's my view. I think people are fundamentally optimistic people and want things to work out. So I'm going to say people vote yes. It's going to be very close. It'll be yes. It'll be less than 60-40. But I think they vote yes. How are we wording it?
All right, so see if you like this. Given the new additions of Rich Cho and Glenn Grunwald to the Grizzlies front office, are you optimistic about the Grizzlies?
Let's make it about the future.
Okay.
No, don't make the future because too many things are good. Change it to, given the additions of Cho and Grunwald.
Yep.
But don't say to the front office. Say, are you optimistic about the Grizzlies front office?
Got it.
That's the part that we're trying to be optimistic about, not just lottery balls and injuries. And
right, things that are luck. Right? Yes.
Things that already exist, like Mike Conley wanting to be traded. So are you Grizzlies optimistic about the Grizzlies front office? That's the important question. And I think people will – no, I think they're going to vote no.
Yeah, I think the answer is just going to be no.
Not only say the answer is just going to be no. Yeah. But will it be worse than 60-40 now?
I don't think it'll be worse than 60-40 because I do –
Yeah.
I could be completely surprised, but on this one, I've always on these polls, I've usually had a pretty good.
You've been very good. Yeah.
But 60-40 feels about right.
Okay. Next question.
All right.
Is Kevin Durant the least appreciated player in the league?
I'm gonna say
on the least. Like it may be some guy.
I know what you're saying.
But
like,
is he among the least appreciated in the league?
I think you have to say yes because it. When you look at like what he does, I mean, last night he goes off for 38 in, I believe, 27 minutes and change, and he's arguably the best cheat code, like video game terminology. Your boys might get that.
I appreciate you explaining it to the old man, mm-hmm. but I do understand the phrase cheat code. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Yes. But I mean, like. You know how we always talk about LeBron's numbers. Well, LeBron in the playoffs, 28.9 points per game on average, 8.9 rebounds per game, 7 assists. Kevin Durant is right there. I mean, you look at his totals. He's 28.8 points. He's 8 rebounds, and he's slightly fewer assists. He's about 4 assists. But, I mean, his numbers are strikingly similar. And then, like, if you want to go to if you want to appease my nerd friends, like his win share numbers are really high, his advanced statistics are really high, and yet it feels like all we do is we look. You can make the argument right now he's the best player on the planet.
I think he's done it to himself.
Yes, I agree on that.
We acknowledge how good he is without really appreciating it. because we're so distracted by the other stuff. We talk with Kevin Durant much more about the other stuff, about his weird temper tantrums and about his where's he going this summer and about the way that he joined a juggernaut. You know, we talk about all of that and his how unbelievably sensitive he is and his burner phone. And so he's done it to himself, but we often forget how awesome he is. All right, draft, by the way, one week from today, we will know if the Cardinals drafted Kyler Murray. Will they draft Kyler Murray?
100%. I mean, I think the dead giveaway yesterday, and I liked this scene. I like when a team's video department creates major issues for the front office. But after the schedule was released, most teams have kind of a promo video basically telling you to get out and buy season tickets. And the Cardinals promo video, the very first one they released, it was about 2 minutes. It didn't even include Josh Rosen. And then yesterday they had to do like a smash, crash, quick edit. And like they were inserting Josh Rosen highlights in there, Jeff. And like it didn't really fit. Like the music was off. If you needed a better indication that Josh Rosen's not going to be an Arizona Cardinal, that was pretty much it.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Josh Allen is left out of the Bills promo if they have players? No, of course not, right?
Right.
Do you think Sam Darnold is left out of the Jets? No, of course not. Do you think Baker is anything but the centerpiece of the Browns? No, of course not. Yeah, they're trading him. He says that he is irritated by the trade stuff. Is he justified in being irritated?
I think he 100% is justified being irritated because it's painfully obvious that the Cardinals are trading him, yet they're stringing him along. They're making him go to all these team functions, knowing full well that they have zero intention of him being their quarterback next year, and just trade the guy. Like, basically what they're doing is they keep holding out, thinking like they're going to get, all of a sudden they're going to get some amazing offer. They leak to everyone, starting at the combine, that they're taking Kyler Murray. Like, they're doing a massive disservice to Josh Rosen, and they're putting him in a horrific situation.
Well, okay. I think he is justified to be irritated just because the situation is irritating, right? You find yourself in this situation, and it's not one you want to be in. 1 year after you're drafted, you're already just kind of hanging in limbo.
Correct. According to Elias Sports Bureau, since the merger, he would be the first quarterback that was taken in the first round that would be moved after 1 year.
Yeah, so he's in an unusual, difficult situation, and he has every right to be irritated and let's be honest, they've decided after 1 year, you're not our guy. Like, so, but I actually don't think it's as much. Trades tend to not happen until the draft and until you know that the player's not, let's say the Redskins want him, right?
Okay.
Well, the Redskins might want to wait and see who falls to them, right? And so they might, maybe the Redskins love Haskins, let's just say, for example, okay? So they're thinking, yeah, we'd like Rosen, but we're not going to give up our one number one pick if Haskins falls to us, and he could. You don't know where he's going to go. So we'll deal with that to you on draft day. I don't actually object to them saying, we're not going to trade you until we get the best offer. And any more than I objected to the Grizzlies, but what I objected to about the Grizzlies hanging Mike Conley out was the sort of, ladies and gentlemen, Mike Conley is going to be traded.
basically, that's what the Cardinals have done, too.
I think it's stupid to but I don't object to them hanging on to him until the last moment.
Don't bring him to all the team functions. Like,
that's fine. I think that's kind of BS. I guess if you're doing that for purposes of, you can just tell him to stay home. You can stay home, and then if we end up keeping you, rejoin us, right?
Yes.
And in the meantime, I get that. I think he is okay to be irritated. And then I never ask you. This has obviously been Tiger Week. That's it's been Grizzlies front office week, but it's also been Tiger Week. So I have two questions for you about Tiger. It's funny to me. Everyone's like, you're never going to win another major. You're never going to win another major. He's never going to win another major. I'm not saying it's you who said that.
Yes,
and then all of a sudden it's now.
Well, he could win the Grand Slam.
He's going to win the Grand Slam and smash Jack. like, what in the world happened? Like, he won one golf tournament by playing very well, but not, he didn't destroy the field. This was not, you know.
No, in fact, everyone, in fact, he won in a manner in which he, and by the way, this is winning a golf tournament. He did what it takes to win a tournament, but he let everyone else, beat themselves.
Yeah, I actually think it, anyway, so my question is he going to break Jack's record, A, and B, is he going to play in Memphis?
I'm going to say no on Jack's record just because I have no idea how long a fused back stays fused and effective, but I'm willing to bet, given how hard Tiger swings and whatnot, I know that's kind of a phrasing issue, I just don't think he's going to stay healthy enough to get. I think if you could say given a clean bill of health, yes, I think he could. He would very, very well could break Jack's record, but I think too many things can go wrong with his health. And then as soon as his putting starts to get even worse than it is now, no matter how good he hits those irons, he's not going to be able to go low enough to win the tournaments. To win the majors against these fields that all can go stupid low.
Okay, and is he going to play Memphis?
I'm going to say yes, he is going to play Memphis primarily because I think there's two pieces of evidence that support this claim. Number one, though he mentioned in his press conference after the Masters that he was going to play less golf this year, he also went out of his way to reference, well, last year he played more because he was trying to get qualified for the WGCs, the World Golf Championships, which, of course, now the FedEx St. Jude Classic is. And another piece of supporting evidence was, schedule-wise, it did not make any sense for him to play the WGC in Mexico because of other tournaments that he was playing right around there, yet he like unquestionably played it. It didn't really fit his schedule. He went and played it because those are important to him. Yes.
So, okay, a little behind the veil. Why did you tell me then earlier when we talked about this off the air that you were going to be the bearer of bad news? Have you changed your mind on this point?
Yes, because I keep going back and forth. Because if I were in this situation, I probably would not play it because I don't need to play it. I would expect Tiger Woods doesn't need the money anymore. And it's the week after the British Open. And I mean, think about what we saw after Tiger never plays the week after a major, usually ever. And then think about what we saw with Tiger Woods at the Ryder Cup after he just won the tour championship. Like, he was emotionally, physically spent. He did not even look himself, and he played terribly. It's a new golf course. It's a place he's never played. I think if I were him, I wouldn't do it. But I do think, given the fact
that,
yes, I think he'll do it.
Okay. Speaking of not looking yourself, did you see my picture? At the Daily Memphian, there was a story. I wrote a column about my coaching debut.
Yes, and there's video on the on YouTube of you doing the Tiger Walk.
Oh, okay. Well, that's okay. I
looking
don't want
too good.
Me coaching. That would be mortifying. I had everything you need to look like a snappily dressed football coach. First of all, I had a quarterback standing next to me. You need that. That's
yes, 100%.
Quarterback. And Brady looked good in this picture.
Yes,
like,
he did.
Brady he's a good-looking guy.
Yes.
And he was semi-ridiculing me with his eyes, you could tell, but still. But then I was dressed by O'Call. I had my black slacks on. I had my blue-striped shirt on from O'Call. And when I say – for a lot of people, you say they didn't look themselves, you mean that as an insult. For me, when you say I don't look myself, you mean that as a total compliment.
Yes, 100%.
I look so much better than myself. And all that was thanks to the good work at O'Call. Seriously, it is a get out there. Jeffrey hates spring, but they love spring at O'Call. And the store is bursting with spring merchandise and the helpful service, legendarily helpful service that they are known for. Jason Smith's going to join us on the other side. Back in a moment, Jeff Dalkacher, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Back on the Jeff Calkins Show. If you walk into any Triumph Bank, you will notice their customer experience wall, any one of their branches. And what you will see is words like confidence, trust, friendly, safe, rewarding, value, attentive. Those are all words that the employees, because they invest their employees with real significance at Triumph Bank, that the employees came up with to describe how they want you to feel as a customer and as a client of the bank. And so, and it's a reminder to them, it's a reminder to you that this is not just any old national bank that plunked down a branch in Memphis on the corner. Triumph Bank started in 2006 by a Memphian. It's grown now more than $800 million in assets, but with a kind of friendly service, an attentive service. Again, I've said this before. If you lose your debit card, you don't have to wait for one to be sent in the mail for 2 weeks. They'll walk in there, they'll print you a new one. It's the kind of thing you don't expect and can't get from a big national bank or bigger massive banks. They can do everything you need. It is a growing, burgeoning regional bank, but they still have that kind of friendly, attentive service that is captured on their experience wall. Go in and visit our friends at Triumph Bank. Right now, I'm going to turn the show over to Jeffrey and Jason Smith. I will talk to you all later.
Jeff, we greatly appreciate it. That music, of course, means it's time to welcome on Jason Smith to the program. Jason, of course, co-host of the Jason and John Show weekdays 11 to 2. He also covers Memphis Tiger basketball for The Athletic at Jason Smith, 929 ESPN. Update on the Jeff Calkins Show poll question. Given the new additions of Rich Cho and Glenn Grunwald, are you optimistic about the Grizzlies front office? It's close, but it's in the other direction than I thought. 54% right now saying yes, they are optimistic about the Grizzlies front office. Jason, does that surprise you?
No, I think it's a quiet, hopeful optimism. You're not going out in the streets and shouting from the corners that the Grizzlies are saved, because there are some concerns, obviously, and they've been well laid out since the hirings. But, everybody's sort of in that. I know I was, and I said it yesterday. I'm in that sort of, let's give it a chance. Let's see what happens. We're certainly all pulling for it. And I think we know we've got smart people in there. How many times have we said that this week? Smart people. Well, now you've got some actual people with some basketball experience. And I know we can look at those resumes and break them down. We've done a lot of that lately and find a lot of mistakes. But, again, I think you've got two guys in Grunwald and in Cho that have got something to prove. And if they make Kleiman look good, that makes them look good. That gives them a new road back to hopefully what are, I'm sure, they want GM spots for them. And so I don't expect there to be a lot of backstabbing. This is pretty open and obvious that it's been pretty laid out what the structure is. You're helping Kleiman. He's making the decisions, and everybody can come out a winner. So I'm quietly hopeful.
I know,
and it sounds like your poll is too.
I know both your show and then I did Eric's show yesterday. We discussed some of the deals that were made, but to me, two things that stood out about both resumes in terms mm-hmm. of decisions.
What'd you see? What
I thought I thought both showed an ability of, when having an asset, of turning it into another asset, expanding assets, which I think is key,
yeah,
especially in a small market.
No question.
Sam Presti's fantastic at it, and of course it makes sense that Rich Cho, who worked with Sam Presti, he also showed that ability.
Right.
And overall, I mean, there were some misses in the draft, but there were plenty of hits as
yeah.
well, considering where, when you add context to where they were drafting, the drafts and whatnot, I thought they had a pretty decent draft record.
Let's just, we talked about this too, sort of, we don't know if he picked Kemba, if Mike picked, but what I like
sure.
about that pick, and I think it was eight
Nine.
Yeah. Is that there were mistakes before and there are mistakes after it. They didn't make one. They got the all-star guy. And so you're gonna give that one to Cho. I like the Tim Hardaway Jr. Pick of Grunwald that was 24. I like the pick there because, again, you hit on a guy late. We've seen the Grizzlies, it won't be anytime soon, but we've seen them in that range miss on guys.
100%.
There's a hit. And, again, this is going back to Kleiman. So hopefully he's the young genius we all hope. We like what we think he did and that group did, the way it's organized now, or at least sort of, with the Mark trade. Again, there's reason for optimism. It's a big job, and so much of it's going to depend on whether you convey the pick, what you do with Conley, in
sure.
terms of how fast this thing gets moving toward the future.
Yeah, there's no question the NBA draft lottery is going to determine
it's huge. I mean, you mess around and get number one, then it changes everything. It might even change how Conley feels about the situation right now. Like, and then maybe you do keep him. But I don't know, anything where I'm at right now, anything other than one, which obviously is a very slim chance, I'm going to go ahead and move him because I don't know how keeping him right now with whatever you bring back in a draft, you get the A pick, whatever, with Jaren Jackson gets you any closer to a title. I'm ready to start moving. I think that front office is as well. And so, again, if you don't get one, and obviously I'm saying one as in Zion, I'm going forward with it. And not just because, hey, look, it's the right thing to do with Mike. I'm ready to move on. I think that's getting on the – that's go ahead and putting 2 feet on the road to whatever you're going to be, you know, whatever you're trying to be.
The other thing that I did like about it is oftentimes we will hear a narrative from either a front office, you pick your team, and then sometimes moves that they make don't line up with their narrative. For instance, my beloved New York Football Giants, a couple of years ago, they were Jerry Reese makes the statement.
They're the kings of this.
Well, they make the statement, we're in win now mode. In the third round, they took Davis Webb, a quarterback that's no longer on the roster.
Like, right.
You can find contributors in the third round, not a developmental quarterback. If you're in win now mode,
talk about an organization that was on short-term planning.
Oh, God.
You sign Odell, you trade him. I mean, what is the plan? It's changed. And you bring up a great comparison with them.
And – to me, when you look at what the Grizzlies have said
uh-huh.
about process and we're looking towards, you know, to me, these decisions line up with what they have stated their plan is.
I like that they admitted it. Now, it's easy to do that when
especially
you
early.
Demoted the guys that are out, and it's a good look for you in terms of with your fans because it what does it do? It puts out the perception of change. But it was good to hear them. It was sort of a confirmation of what we've been saying.
Yeah.
These have been short-term plans, short-sighted. One day you're trying to be as competitive. A couple of things go wrong. Then you're ready to go in a new route. Hey, let's – and it just kept changing. And, again, this franchise for so long now, for a few years now, has needed a vision that you stick to, one that you stick to that the fans can – and that's been the problem. Now, some of that has been – you know, some of it's been out of their hands. Last year, they had to go ahead and go in the tank because, again, injuries,
yes.
you know, forced you to do that. You had to pick that. But, again.
And there was incentive to do it.
No question about it. And you got something good out of that. I think, you know, I think there's a possibility, again, you convey the pick. Maybe you want to do that again next year. There'd be a possibility of you doing something really big in the 2020 draft. That's another path you could go. A lot of people disagree with me. All that said, there's hope. And look, what else do we have? What else do we damn it? It's our NBA team. We can sit here and argue about the process or, you know, the guys that are doing it. But I'm hopeful. And what I know is that we don't know when exactly Chris Wallace stopped making the calls, but we know he's not doing it now. Everybody wanted that done. It was time. They've moved on. Let's give him a chance.
Okay. Speaking of hope, is there hope that Precious Achiuwa will wind up playing basketball here in Memphis?
Well, you get him on for an official visit, which happens Monday, as has been reported. You've got a dang chance. The problem with Precious Achiuwa, or at least I shouldn't say problem because they're sitting pretty good. You've even got some people picking Precious to Memphis. The problem is you're in it with Kansas and UNC and, you know, some pretty
even
heavy,
UConn feels good about their chances.
UConn thinks they're getting them. You're in there with some pretty heavy hitters that you don't, you know. You know, their situations, what they've got coming back, you don't know how desperate they are is the way mm-hmm. I'll put it. So this one's an arms race, if you know what I mean. I mean, this one, you're in it with the big dogs, and who knows what it's going to take to land Precious, but what you like, you're a Tigers fan, boom, you got them coming for an official visit. They've been effective when they've had those guys on campus, usually closed soon after. Now, I'm not telling you they're going to get a commitment from them on the visit. I don't think you get that from top 10 and top 15 guys when they come. It's business with them. But having him here gives you the chance. Look, man, they've got one of the best facilities in the country.
Yeah.
They're going to wine and dine and put him at the Peabody. Penny Hardaway, Mike Miller put the charm on him. You've got him. You're going to have him feeling good going out of here. Again, this is one against some other folks that have got some power behind them. There's no question about it. But I feel good about their chances. Here's the thing I should say. We've said it, but it must be said again. You're feeling good about their chances with Lester Quinones. You know, the IMG Academy shooting guard that can, you know, knock it down and they need it. He feels like a Memphis. Precious has talked openly about the two of them played. That's the thing that you would have, in addition to Mike Miller and Penny Hardaway. That's the domino that you would have that UNC and Kansas wouldn't. I'm not telling you Lester is the end-all, be-all in getting Precious, but you've got something the other schools don't.
Does it seem like the momentum or the enthusiasm for Trenton Watford going to Memphis, does it seem like it's cool to you?
Yes. Yes. And if it hadn't before Will Wade gets reinstated, it certainly did then for most. Not just me, but for most. My thing, Jeff, a lot of times I'm going off vibe with these kids. I've done it long enough that, you know, a lot of times end up wrong. There's no question. I'm not going to sit here and tell you we hit on 100 of them.
This is hard.
But, Jeffrey, you know, you get off the phone with these kids and you feel a vibe. You feel whether or not they're feeling that school. And in that feeling, you can kind of get a, you know, you get your feel. Your gut starts talking. And when I saw him last week at the Jack Jones, I did not – again, I've said this. They play things close to the vest, that family. They've been through it with Christian Watford, having gone through this and gone to Indiana. But I just didn't get a – you know, again, hey, DJ Jeffrey says you're – I think it was Drew Hill asked him this question from the commercial appeal. Hey, DJ says you're coming. You know, he feels pretty good about it. It wasn't a – oh, yeah, I know. I love DJ. And, man, we would be good together. It was a, oh, does he?
Huh.
You know, and again, some of that, maybe he's playing it. But, again, I've always sort of envisioned that this might be the case, that Will Wade's, the whole time that he was out, he's, hey, man, I'm going to be back. Mm-hmm. Trenton, I'm going to be back, baby.
Yeah, he did not stop recruiting,
when he was suspended.
Oh, why would he?
You
don't. I'm going to be. Now, the thing with Will Wade is, you know, who knows what happens there? It's not done just because he's reinstated. But I know, we all thought it was, you know, months ago, we all thought it was LSU and Memphis. And when Will Wade went out, we really thought Memphis' chances went up. Well, you know,
why would you go to LSU if you're that?
Well, kid? For him, it's about playing time. I mean, they got guys leaving. You know, Will's told everybody, hey, go test the NBA. But a lot of these guys, you know, Nas, a lot of these guys are gonna be leaving.
Yeah.
And so the time is there. And if you feel like Will Wade's a damn good coach,
yeah,
you know, and that he's not gonna get popped, mm-hmm. and I'm sure that's what he's telling these kids.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Then you feel like the relationship. If Will Wade's telling you, hey, man, everything's gonna be good. We're gonna be fine. We're gonna get through this. And I need you to help me do it. You're the key to it. You already had a great relationship with him. I'm just not counting them out. A lot of crystal balls have gone back to LSU for Trenton Watford. You can't count them out because, again, you've got Penny and Mike Miller in that relationship there, particularly with Mike and how deep it goes. But I don't know. I'm with you. John's talked about it for weeks. We've talked about it for weeks. Their angle felt like it changed a little bit when they found out we can go 2-for-1 possibly with Lester and Precious. Let's play that strategy. It, while still holding the door open for Trenton, if he commits, we're taking him 100%. But maybe this is a better play, and it feels like that's sort of the way it's going.
You are 100% right, though, about if you can talk to kids and getting a vibe. Because I'd had, you know, when I was writing recruiting stories, you'd talk to a kid, and the team that you're covering would tell you, "We're great shape,
oh,
great shape."
Happened to me 100 times, yes.
Josh, I'm talking to the kid.
Josh at
the
end.
It's a lock.
I told this story. Kelly Oubre at the Peach Jam. Josh says they're all over him. Hey, why don't you write a story about Kelly? Because we're going to be on him. Ask Kelly about Memphis. He looks at you like,
what?
You mean the school Derrick Rose that was at a few years ago? Like, that's kind of falling off the map, bro? Oh, let me say something nice about them. I mean, that's how it felt. And so you get that vibe. Oh, man, Kelly Oubre ain't thinking about Memphis, and you could stop.
Yeah.
And, to your point, that was, man, that's one that stuck out.
I mean, I had kids.
He almost looked at me like, what, bro? No.
I'd have kids in that exact
situation. They want you to write that story so bad,
Josh,
right?
You know,
get that out there.
So it looks like, and listen, especially at the end, right, when maybe the transfers have started, things are starting to come unraveled, and you want it to look like you're still on the top guys.
Right.
It's one of the things that, I thought about, you know, with Josh, is that early on, and again, young coaches, Josh oftentimes was more worried about perception than what I can actually get. His recruitment of Cliff Alexander was a perfect example of that. You remember the big man that was going to Kansas?
Sure.
And Josh was more concerned about, none of us thought he was going to Memphis.
Yeah. Right.
But Josh was so concerned, man, if I get him on for a visit, it makes it look like we're popping.
Right.
It makes it look like I'm still after the biggest guys. Yeah. And after a while, you've got to cut that stuff, stop worrying about perception, and start recruiting and putting those time into guys that you know you can, you've got a real
legitimate
shot.
That's when we settled in on
with
Stan Simpson, actually, I think at that point.
Simpson. That always gets brought up.
I mean, I think
hey, he's teaching. We're going to have him on the show, yes. And I do love him because he was going to have a monster senior season.
No, I know. He's from Illinois.
He was
going to Red Lake College.
Yeah, he's from Chicago.
JUCO.
Yeah, he's from Chicago. Yeah. You're right.
But, I mean, to your point, I mean, I used to always think back to what Andy Kinney used to say, in which, obviously, you know, if we can get the Malik Newmans of the world, we're going to go after him.
He was reasonable, right?
But you got to have plan B. Well, he was reasonable.
Well, and
he was reasonable.
Came to Memphis, his approach to Memphis, I thought.
He
like,
was
you're not
going
to get the top Memphis guys, so get the ones that fall through
exactly
the cracks. That's the right approach.
But it's the same thing. It's like when Rick Ray was the head coach of Mississippi State, clearly Malik and Rick Ray, they did not see eye to eye for Malik's future.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously that was when, you know, Ole Miss was going after him. And then lo and behold, Mississippi State makes the change with Rick Ray. They bring in Ben Hallen.
Right.
Hallen realized he had a much better chance with Newman. And then, of course, in the end, he ends up losing him to Kansas. But it's the exact same thing. It's be realistic and knowing when to back off. Because I think oftentimes when people, you wind up, if you don't have a plan B, you wind up having a roster that is filled with holes.
See, that's what makes now so crazy. Is because now you're realistic. It's a new realistic.
Yes.
In terms of what you can get. And again, I make this point. I don't think we say it enough. I don't know that there's been a more exciting time in Tigers basketball recruiting history. Because, again, Cal would pick off some and you'd get some high. I mean, Derrick Rose is the prime example. But you didn't have two to three to four top 25 five-stars. He put that crew together from Laurinburg. They weren't all super highly ranked. And so this is a new level. This is one we now. The other part is that you've put the wall around Memphis and done that part, right? The Balls and Wisemans and Malcos and DJs, but and you feel like it's realistic. You guys start knocking these guys down. And look, all these guys were going to go into the spring. I just don't think they get to this point having gone as deep as some with some of these guys and with the relationships that they've had with them and not get anything. They're definitely. It feels like they're definitely going to get Lester. And again, you get Lester in. It sweetens your chances with Precious Achiuwa, who's coming in on Monday.
Also, for The Athletic this week, you wrote about DJ Jeffries. What were your impressions now? I mean, obviously, you've talked to DJ a lot the last couple of years, but what were your impressions for the story?
You know, talking, I knew DJ, the basketball player, what he could do on the floor. Didn't know the kid. I'll just be real honest with you. Hadn't spent a great deal of time with him after games or sitting around or anything like that. And so to get a chance to go down there, sit with him in sort of his inner circle, you know, his grandmother, his father, his uncle, you know, his uncle was part of that Olive Branch coaching staff. Eric Rumbaugh is Olive Branch coach. You know, his mom, you really learn, Jeffrey, you know this, you talk to a family, you learn about the person.
Yes.
And again, I'll tell you this. What I found out about DJ is how reluctant he is, how much he doesn't quite know yet. When I say reluctant, I mean it in this sense. He doesn't know yet how good he is. I know a lot of us say it's sports cliche to say that, but he doesn't. Like, there's a whole nother level with him, and you've seen it a few times. You saw it against R.J. Barrett a couple of summers ago. Mark Giannato's written about it. I touched on it in the story. There is a dog in him. When it comes time to go against the R.J. Barretts and the big dogs, that comes out, and he's a different dude. When he gets in those lines and his literally, like, he starts biting his bottom lip, and a dog comes out of him, and DJ Jeffries is a top 10 player in the country when that happens. The question is, he's not always there.
Right.
He's not always that dude. And it's sort of finding. It's funny. I didn't put this in the story, but when he's 3-4 years old, he wanted his He wanted his uncle and his dad. He wanted to be called DJ Dog. Yeah, he wanted not just his DJ Dog, as in DAWG. I'm a dog. And I sort of,
That doesn't I don't think of that when I think of him.
It was when he finds his inner dog, yeah. whatever it is, at the competition level going up, people saying he's not a top 10 talent. Mm-hmm. Look at, you know, some of his rankings, he slipped even further. He slipped down to 40s. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It brings out something in him that changes, you know, an aggressiveness that you go, holy moly, look at the player they're getting. And when you see those, so for him and so for his family, it's always been, let's get this guy to that. Let's he's got to believe he's got all that power. And we got into it with the family. It's on and off the court. This kid's got so much charisma when it comes to off the court and with fans. And I love what DeSoto County Schools do and that program did, letting him talk to Olive Branch Elementary School kids who look up to him and all that. He's giving them the message. I love that because not enough of our, you know, our high school stars are doing stuff like that, right, that gets them prepared.
Yep.
And anyway, he's a great representative for Olive Branch, was a troublemaker as a kid, could have gone down a different path. That family surrounded him, done a great job with him. And now they're all trying to get him to that level I'm talking about. He's just scratching the surface of how good he can be. Penny knows it because he's seen it. He had him for 2 years in that grassroots organization of his. So if they can get that DJ dog out of DJ Jeffries, the dog we talked about, it's almost like he hulks out. They get that guy at Memphis next year.
That's exciting.
With James Wiseman, we're probably not talking enough about this kid. That was my takeaway from the interview down there.
Jordan Brand Classic is this weekend in Las Vegas. If you're a Tiger fan, it's got to be exciting because you can actually care now.
You got. I want to tell you, Jeffrey, they're all on the same team. That it's not. It's trending. It's DJ. This is Saturday in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And this is the reason Trenton says he's pushed his, you know, his date was the 20th. It was Saturday during this thing. It's not being televised. I think there's a live stream of it on Twitter that actually our man Van Latham from TMZ will be on the call. Can you imagine that?
How about that?
It's weird, right? Small world that our guy Van Latham is like calling the game in the Twitter live stream of the Jordan Brand Classic. Back to the point, DJ Jeffries, Trenton Watford, and James Wiseman all scheduled to be on the on one squad in that. And so, hell, I guess a bunch of Memphis fans are going to be on Twitter live streaming this thing because we can't watch it on television.
I'm not going to ask you to name guys that you think they're going to get, but in terms of more additions to the roster before next fall, how many guys do you think, how many new names do you think we'll see?
Three, maybe as many as four. Three is the number I've got circled right now. You figure Lester Quinones, I would say, feels really good. I think with that, you want Precious or Trenton or at least someone like them in that sort of forward range. You've already planned for that. So that'd be two. And whether it's the kid we had on yesterday from Little Rock, you know, a graduate transfer who they can use, Rajon, who lit him up when he came here. It still feels like they need some experience in that backcourt if they can get it, and that's certainly one of the avenues they're looking at. So number-wise, three. That's what's open right now. And listen, you know, maybe you don't get Rajon because you're waiting to see, and this is a real possibility, you have to hold out and wait of getting R.J. Hampton to reclassify and come down. And, that decision won't be made until July. And so you've got to hold out sort of for that. And so, again, I'm thinking three, maybe as many as four.
Who on this roster currently needs to have the best summer?
That's a good question. I hadn't thought about it. Who needs to have the best summer?
For the Tigers to...
Like Alo?
Guys that are on the roster coming back. That's a great question that I hadn't put any thought into, that needs to have the best summer. Just in terms of needs to have so they can actually be...
Correct.
I
actually wasn't going to go Alo. I was thinking Alo
when you said that.
Oh, Tyler. I was thinking Tyler Harris needs to be, because we saw enough flashes. To me, Tyler Harris did exactly what you want to as a freshman, with the exception of being, you know, just elite all the time. But to me, I always thought Tyler was going to have ups and downs as a freshman. Mm-hmm. But I thought we saw enough flashes from Tyler to where I go, okay, he's going to be okay. But I do think for Memphis to maximize what they have, spacing everything,
I like
changing the way that teams defend them.
Brad, I like his pick.
I think
you like Tyler. Well, you think Tyler's?
I was with you. I was leaning Alo as he's asking the question, and I'm thinking about it because you're thinking, look, well, Alo needs a floater, and Alo needs more confidence in his jumper, and all this stuff, and there could be so much more. But Alo, we see he's at his best when he's just getting steals and playing a great defense.
Yes,
and
right.
Because Tyler's got so much of an ability to explode offensively, that's why he was on the court more.
Yeah.
And so to Jeffrey's point, since he's probably going to be on the court more, you need his scoring, quite frankly. You want to see the percentages. The percentages have to go up. Have to go up. Bad shot, good shot, all that stuff. They have to go
up.
They
needed him to shoot a little more volume this year.
He's got more of a green light, but he does because of his range, and you're going to have to live with that. But because he's going to be on the floor more, because of his scoring, the other areas he's got to be better in, to your point. And so whether it's and we saw some games, he got four steals. He can get in passing lanes with his quickness, whether it's that, whether it's running the show as point guard. Look, with Alex, I just feel like, when he's at his best, it's just being him. And that's not a huge level of go up there.
Correct.
It's just a confidence. Just when he's doing his things, that's the best Alex you're going to get. Giving it to guys in their spots. Setting up James Wiseman and Malcolm Dandridge and all those guys. Tyler's got a lot more in him in terms of upside. What he can do, how explosive he can be on the college level. So he's got to be better in the other areas because he's going to be out there more, I feel like. With Alex, you can throw in ball. You're going to have a different look. You know, there's no question, a little bit bigger, a little bit more athletic. Same thing with Tyler because he's running a little bit of the point too, but Tyler's got to get better in the other areas. So I would say that, Jeffrey, to answer your question. I think you leaning his way is probably the right way.
And the bigger reason why I say it is, for instance, I don't think when Alex Lomax played well, I don't think it affected the outcome of the game as much as it did with Tyler Harris. Yeah. Typically when Tyler played, shot the ball well, they won.
I mean, they lost. You know, what's funny is that early in the season, he's averaging 16 points. Before Penny makes the switch to let's all give it to Jeremiah and pulls those freshmen into the bench and puts the seniors out there, he's averaging 16. And it was good, and you said, oh, he's better than we thought. There was a lot of that. Hey, Tyler had been, 80 outside the right, to fringe top 100 guy, and people think, well, he's not going to do much. And then you go, holy cow, this kid's averaging 16 as a freshman. He's pretty special. But they weren't winning in the big games. I'm not going to – I mean, and again, you could make an argument they didn't win them later on either, and it was not having those that is the reason they didn't get in the NCAA tournament. But Alex – I want to just say this in fairness to Alex. He can change a game defensively. We saw it this year. He can make a couple of plays, and with that – now, in a box score, Tyler is going to – and probably more times offensively, he's going to change – has – more of an opportunity to change a game, but Alex can change a game. I don't want to take away from that kid because we saw it this year. I can't remember if it was Tulsa or not, but he put the smack down second half, just kind of put the lockdown, and it changed a couple of games. It really did.
What do you have coming up on the show today?
Eric Bossy, we're going to talk recruiting because, again, this is a big weekend for the Tigers with so much out, the Jordan Brand Classic when Precious coming on Monday. And then we've got Trey Draper, the IMG assistant. He can tell us a lot more about Lester Quinones, and they won a national championship down there in his first season down at IMG. So, shout out to Trey Draper and IMG pulling in a national championship with all those D1 talents. It's funny.
Probably an awesome gig, I bet.
Man, that's what I was going to say. That guy, he's got every college.
Think about it.
IMG has every college coach in the country down there because they've got so many D1s. Now they're winning national championships. It's basically
even play state championships.
It's what you thought of Oak Hill back in a few years ago.
Yeah.
They are that now, them and Montverde and those schools.
Sure.
And they get every college coach. So Trey's getting those relationships.
Oh, my goodness.
And this would be, for a guy that wants to coach college basketball,
he's
making all the, he's making all the right connections.
Yeah.
He's on his way. There's no question about it.
Well, I mean, Chris Winkie, that's where he was before he went back to the NFL coaching.
Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, was he down there? The director of football.
Well, you see, one of their guys was in the college scandal thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
You can see why. I mean, it would be a logical. I'm not pointing fingers at IMG.
How much money did
power.
That brother? He looked like sailboat dude, Jeffrey, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Rocking the Nautica.
Oh, man. You know what I mean? wrap the sweater around his neck and stuff.
He looks like
folded with the arms. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He looks like Bradley Cooper in Wedding Crashers.
No.
Yeah.
Bingo, bro.
Yeah.
And that man was pulling in all kind of slick money.
Oh,
man. He had it made.
Yeah.
Jason, we appreciate it, my man.
Appreciate you, brother.
We come back. Chris Harrington joins the program. Stick around. You're listening to the Jeff Calkins Show right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright. I'll be alone,
dancing. We always start the second hour of the program speaking with Chris Harrington. Let's fire it up.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and Beyond. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris, what are we listening to?
That's Don't You Forget About Me by the Simple Minds. Little new wave hit from the mid-80s. Most associated with the movie The Breakfast Club. And The Breakfast Club will screen along with Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Weird Science in a John Hughes triple bill tomorrow night at the Summer Drive-In.
Oh, okay. So that was
a drive-in.
Well, that was a surprise. I actually thought you were going to go with it because of Kevin Durant.
No. That's good too. We'll retrofit that.
That's always one of my favorite things is to when Chris will send me the song. I'm trying to figure out what the theme is. So I missed on that one. I will ask you this. Is Kevin Durant underappreciated as a basketball player?
I think probably so. He is, with LeBron James sort of tailing off a little bit, I think, this season. Obviously, nowhere to be seen at the moment. Kevin Durant is still in the best player in the world discussion. I think it's like a handful of players are in that discussion, but he is in that discussion. Giannis Antetokounmpo and James Harden have had the best total season this year. But I think Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and probably still LeBron at his peak are also in that conversation. And I think there's a case to be made for Kevin Durant.
Obviously, particularly with the Warriors, Kevin Durant has typically had more around him than LeBron. But it is fascinating when you go look at the playoff numbers. We always talk about what a statistical machine LeBron is in the playoffs. The only thing Kevin Durant really trails him in is assists, and it's like two a game. But, I mean, other than that, points are almost the exact same. Rebounds are almost the exact same. Do you think it's the fact that because he went to Golden State, the fashion that he did it is – it just feels like we always look to make arguments. And I'm not saying you in particular, but it does feel like those that cover basketball look for arguments against Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I think there's some of that. I also think that – because of the situation in Golden State, there's the sharing of burden and there's the element of coasting in the regular season. And so you don't get the sense of him. He's not putting up as enormous as his regular season numbers are. Like, put him in Houston instead of James Harden.
Yeah.
Like, he probably not putting up the same stat line James Harden is, but he's putting up a bigger one than he does in Golden State. And he's probably not, sort of coasting as much in the middle of the season because he can't. Because he doesn't have Steph Curry next to him. And I think Durant is still in his prime. And so if he leaves and goes to New York next season, which I think seems likely, and he is the clear-cut man again on a team, and even if he brings Kyrie Irving or Kemba Walker or someone like that with him, he will be the clear-cut man on the team. I think we may get a little reminder that this is a guy who is one of the – probably one of the best forwards in the history of the game.
How well do you think Kyrie and Kevin Durant would play together?
I think they would be awesome.
Yeah.
I don't think, Kyrie is not as good as Steph Curry, but, you can't always have two of the five best players in the world. I think it'd be best for the NBA if we didn't have a team with two of the five best players in the world next season. But I would take my chances in a playoff series with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving on my team, or Kemba Walker, or any number of other people. But I think Kevin Durant, you could say he has been the best player on a title team. It's sort of an argument between him and Curry, but he's on the very, very short list of the best players in the world, and he's got an extra gear defensively that he can reach for when he wants to with his size.
Talking, of course, with Chris Harrington at Harrington NBA, at Chris Harrington on Twitter. Let's get into some Grizzlies news. The Memphis Grizzlies announced yesterday a medical update on Kyle Anderson. He did undergo successful thoracic That sounds like a dinosaur. Thoracic outlet decompression surgery on Wednesday to resolve right shoulder soreness and other affiliated symptoms. He is expected to make a complete recovery and return to full basketball participation for the Grizzlies before the 2019 training camp opens. Was any of that news surprising? I guess the bigger question is why wait so long for Kyle Anderson's surgery, I think?
Well, have you ever seen an NBA press release that says the surgery is not successful or the player is not expected?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Same thing with Tommy John surgery. I've never seen an unsuccessful ACL surgery. Yeah, no, I've never seen unsuccessful surgeries, typically, from a team announcement.
So, I mean, the reason they waited is because the injury or the condition, or whether you call it a condition or an injury, I'm not sure what you would really call this. The thing that he had is not something that automatically means surgery. I wrote about this. I broke the news on it last week. It feels like a month ago, but it was last Wednesday night. The thing that he had, the first step to treat it is always just treatment. It's physical therapy. And the second step is pain relief, and that happened. He got the injection. It does not typically result in surgery, but there are cases when it does, when it's ultimately surgery is ultimately recommended. But it's not a first step. Surgery is sort of a last step. And so they were exhausting all the other treatment paths and consulting multiple doctors. And so this was not something where, like, you know, he didn't, like, you know, tear a muscle or break a bone. Or it wasn't something that immediately has an obvious outcome to it.
Right.
And so they were sort of going through the process of crossing off the other potential outcomes before you get to the surgical. And so that's why he didn't have it immediately. It wasn't clear he would ever have it at all. It just sort of got to that point. As far as the recovery from it, it's a pretty common surgery in baseball among pitchers. It is a rare surgery in basketball, although Brandon Ingram just had it. Brandon Ingram for the Lakers just had the same surgery. He had it for different underlying reasons. It was to address a different thing, but it was the exact same surgery. So now we have two players who had it late in the season or are trying to come back next season. So that'll be a pretty good test for this particular surgery as it relates to basketball. Generally speaking, you know, players come back from it, and in some cases in baseball, come back as good as ever. But that's not 100% either. And so the expectation the Grizzlies have and then Anderson and his people have is that he'll be fully recovered and as good as Sue for training camp in the fall. But I don't think we can say with 100% certainty that's going to be the case. You know, we can hope.
If the Grizzlies do indeed move on from Mike Conley, do you think that has any impact on the future of Kyle Anderson with the Grizzlies?
I don't know if it's tied to Conley, but I think it's tied to lots of other things. I mean, I wrote about this a little bit late in the season before the surgery happened, and I sort of circled back to it today in a notebook I put up this morning. But, you know, Kyle Anderson is a really unusual player. He's not a plug-and-play. He's not your classic 3-and-D who just play for any team in any style. He's talented, but he has a very specific sort of set of strengths and weaknesses. And the Grizzlies signed him for a certain team, and I think even then we sort of hadn't quite figured out the best way to maximize him. And then he got hurt, and the team totally changed. And so he was already going to come back to a different roster than the one he was signed to play on, which I think raises some level of question about fit. But then since then, now, in addition to that, he's going to be coming back off of a major surgery and coming back under a front office that is not the front office that signed him. And so I don't know what Zach Kleiman's vision for how Kyle Anderson fits long-term is the same as Chris Wallace and John Hollinger's was, right? And so I think there are all kinds of questions about Kyle Anderson. I mean, and one of the questions, no matter what, is like, what is his ultimate best position? The Grizzlies were at their best early in the season when he played a lot of power forward.
Right.
They were closing games with him at the four. You know, what do the Grizzlies think now like about where they want to play him ultimately? You know, they already have, obviously, Jaren Jackson Jr. It looks like, you know, it seems likely they'll have Jonas Valanciunas. You know, Bruno Caboclo they're trying to develop is probably more of a four. You don't know what the draft's going to give you. Like, you know, this is another situation we talked about, like, if they get lucky, get Zion, that complicates Jonas Valanciunas. It might complicate Kyle Anderson, too. And so I think there's all kinds of questions about Kyle Anderson's future with the Grizzlies.
Well, the other thing I was going to ask you about, how attractive is his contract? Because to me, it seems like the general consensus last summer was the Grizzlies overpaid for Kyle Anderson, but like it wasn't the type of, oh my God, like what are they doing? But there is the idea that they paid too much for what his value is. So wouldn't that make him less attractive?
Oh, it's certainly negative value now with the injury. I think he's not tradable at all. Whether that changes depends on him getting healthy and them finding a productive use for him. I think Kyle Anderson's a good player. I think the contract, in retrospect, was sort of a debatable proposition. I don't think it was clearly a bad contract at all. I think you have to maximize his skill set, and I don't think the Grizzlies did a great job of doing that. I still think he was a good player for the Grizzlies, especially defensively. He's one of these players where the stat line doesn't really tell the story. A lot of advanced stat stuff has him as one of the best rim defenders in the league last year. He's a really good, versatile defender. He does lots of things really well. He's still young. I think you got to get him healthy, and then you have to maximize what he can do in the context of your team. And then at that point, either you're going to use him, or hopefully you have rehabbed him to the point that he is someone you could trade if you want to.
You mentioned the fact that he's now under a front office that did not bring him in. Is he also another guy that kind of his impact will be most affected by what the Grizzlies do at the head coaching position? Because to me it seems like, based on the parameters that you're laying out, that you essentially have to have a coach that either A, knows how to use his skill set, or be a coach that believes in his skill set.
Yeah, I think that's true. And it's also the situation where, yes, he has to be used in certain ways to maximize him, but he's not the level of talent where a coach is going to bend their entire system and plan to maximize Kyle Anderson, right?
Right.
And so, it's not like, if I give you Joel Embiid, but you're a small ball coach, but you have Joel Embiid, well, you're going to change what you do because you have Joel Embiid.
Right.
Like, that's not Kyle Anderson, right? He's going to be a secondary player, even in the best of circumstances. And so, yeah, I think, that's a good point. I mean, to the litany of things I've already said about the roster change and the injury and the new front office, add a new coach to that, too. And I don't think you base your hire on whether, you think this guy can deploy Kyle Anderson well or wants to. But that adds another complication to his future, sure.
Talking, of course, with Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian, at Harrington NBA for his NBA Twitter account, at Chris Harrington for his personal Twitter account. Okay, I asked Kevin Pelton about this yesterday, and I know you and I have talked about it a little bit on the show, but he made an interesting point yesterday in regards to Mike Conley and his trade value. And I think most of us, or I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I, from those that I had spoken with, seemed to think that Mike Conley only helped his trade value going into the summer because, A, there would be more teams involved, more than likely, and then, B, everyone got to kind of get a look at Mike Conley in an offense with more tempo. But Kevin made an interesting point yesterday that there are teams, if you're going to trade him to a team that's a contender, presumably, what makes it the most interesting is the fact that you now lost another playoff run with him, and he's already an aging point guard. So my bigger question for you is, does that positively, negatively affect his trade value? Do you think, in comparison to the trade value that we saw at the deadline this summer, do you think it's increased or decreased?
Well, I think there's two different ways to look at that.
Sure.
I think it expands the number of teams that could be interested. I think at the deadline, you had a very narrow group of teams. Your Utah, your Indiana, your Detroit. I think there are more teams potentially who could be involved in the summer. And so I think summer expands the range of possibilities. But to the point, the teams that were already involved at the deadline, yes. I mean, if Utah traded for Mike Conley in February, they would have gotten three playoff runs out of him. Now if they trade for him this summer, they'll only get two. Does that lower the value of what that team might be able to would be willing to offer? That I'm not sure about, but I do think it suggests that if you're a playoff team this season who had a chance to trade for Mike Conley in February, and you end up doing so in the summer, you probably should have gone ahead and done it. And I think Utah is at the top of that list. I think Utah messed up. I think they should have traded for Mike Conley. Would they have beaten Houston? I mean, probably not. It is a situation where they found themselves at sort of that bad playoff matchup. But, you know, if they had gotten into a different matchup, if they're playing Oklahoma City or Portland or, you know, one of those teams, I think having Mike Conley would give them much more of an advantage than they would have otherwise had.
They would have won more games down the stretch and they end up getting the three.
Right, exactly. And so I tend to think that there are some teams, Utah top the list, that made a mistake in not being more aggressive to try to get Conley. And so, yeah, and in that situation, waiting, you know, basically removes one more playoff run you could have had with him. And so I don't know whether that is certainly true. Does that impact, you know, does their offer get lower rather than higher? I don't know. But I do think more teams potentially get involved in the summer.
Do we have any indication, and I know it's so early, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I am asking out of curiosity. Do we have any indication if this front office would have felt the same way about the Conley trade that Utah and that other teams presumably offered, saying it's not enough? Do we have any indication whether or not this front office would have felt differently had they been in power at the deadline?
I mean, I think it was shifting. I think what we found out is that it was starting to shift around the deadline, that the regime that put this team into place at the start of last season, that did the moves over the summer, that messed up the Brooks trade, that was sort of the old front office. And by the time you got to the trade deadline, you weren't all the way there, but you were sort of shifting more towards the new people, who I think had more of a say in what did and didn't happen than they did last summer. And so I suspect that given the offers that were apparently available, that the same group would have also not traded Mike Conley at the deadline. I don't know that, but I suspect that to be the case. Because apparently the best asset on the table at that time was a 2019 draft pick that was likely to be in the 20s, right? The Utah pick this season, which is like number 23. Or the Pacers pick, which ended up being 19, but at the time of the deadline was projected to be in the 20s. And so, I think they looked at it and said, if we're trading Mike Conley and basically all we're getting back is one pick in the 20s in a bad draft, we just don't think that's worth doing it. And I don't think that necessarily would have been different.
But based on what you're telling me, you don't think the Grizzlies could trade Conley this summer for the rights to get the number two pick?
Yeah, no. I think that's pretty unlikely.
Seems unlikely. Okay, another question that we got on social media yesterday and didn't get around to getting to it. When do you expect the Grizzlies will start holding draft workouts? I mean, I guess the bigger question is, will they have draft workouts because will they have a draft pick in the first round?
Oh, I would be surprised if they held any workouts in Memphis until after the lottery and they know what the situation with the pick is. Even then, it seems like it's the last few years it's gotten away from those in-town workouts a little bit. They still have them. But you know, you have these, you know, sort of larger multi-team things that happen now. And so the Portsmouth Invitational is going on right now, which is mostly guys who probably won't be drafted, late second round, the undrafted guys. I know the Grizzlies have multiple people out there now. Around the lottery, there will be the pre-draft workouts in Chicago, the Combine, and that's when they'll do a lot of their face-to-face interviews with potential draft prospects, and they'll see people in group settings. And then another thing that happens now is that agents who have multiple players in the draft will hold sort of workouts,
right,
you know, usually in Los Angeles or somewhere, and they'll bring teams will come in. And so, you know, I suspect you'll have workouts at FedEx Forum, but I don't think they'll happen anytime soon, and I don't think they will be in the same volume, you know, that they were 10 years ago.
How important is the on-court stuff in a workout? Because to me it seems like one of the biggest aspects of having a face-to-face, you know, an in-house workout, if you will, is information that you would obtain, you know, medicals and whatnot, stuff that you usually get up at the combine. So I've always wondered, like, how important is a workout itself?
The conventional wisdom is that the workouts are overrated.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily believe that, but just, I mean, part of it is that, you know, you have your own scouts have seen these guys presumably in person multiple times, so they have that. But I think there's value in seeing players in person, in competitive, even if it's a workout, in a competitive situation in person. I think you get a better feel for athleticism and size in person than you do on tape. And I say that based on experience, because for a long time the Grizzlies had lots of draft workouts. They let the media into them, and I went to them. I was there for the Kevin Love workout. I was there for the Darrell Arthur workout. I was there for, you know, the Tyreek Evans and the James Harden. I was there for a lot of these things. And my personal experience was I never based my opinion on a player just on the workout. I always had an opinion going into the workout that was based on watching their games on TV, based on their stats, based on, you know, everything available to me. So I took an opinion into the workout and then saw them up close in person. And the workout would tend to pivot me in a little bit in one direction or another. It wouldn't change my opinion, but it would shift it either a little bit more positive or a little bit more negative. And in retrospect, it almost always shifted in the correct, in the right direction. And so I don't think you can base your opinion on a workout. And I think you have to be careful about what you're looking for and what you're not in a workout. Like if a guy's a good shooter, like historically over the course of multiple seasons, and he shoots poorly in a workout, like I don't care.
Right.
But in terms of getting a sense of their size, athleticism, and sort of skill level with the ball relative to other draft prospects, I do think you can see that in competitive workouts in a meaningful way.
Who's a guy that assured your opinion in the positive that you saw in a workout?
I mean, Kevin Love is the obvious one. He was just a total destructive force against really good players.
Of course.
Darrell Arthur worked out against Anthony Randolph.
Yeah.
And at the time, I liked Randolph a lot in his college season. I'd started to move him down my list a little bit after the season. Darrell Arthur, I'd liked, but, you know, I wasn't sure about his size. And so I had Randolph ahead of Arthur. And when I saw them work out against each other, I flipped it. Because you could see it. I remember Courtney Lee working out, and the Grizzlies didn't draft Courtney Lee. He ended up coming to the Grizzlies years later. But Courtney Lee did a workout with five other players. It was six. I don't remember who the rest of them were. But it was six, you know, guard, wing, prospect.
Yeah.
And it was clear watching those six players go through everything that Courtney Lee was the NBA player on the floor. Like, it just jumped out. In terms of his shooting, his speed, the way he elevated off the floor, you could just see the difference in these guys are marginal, and this guy's a real NBA player. And I think there are times where you can see that in those sets.
Talking, of course, with Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian. Over at the Daily Memphian, he's got a food fight between Los Camales and Los Picosos. How do you say it? Picos? Picosos?
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 I don't know. I don't know. I am not an expert on pronunciation in that regard.
We'll discuss that in one moment because I live right behind Summer Avenue. So that this is, and I'm a Camales guy, but apparently I've got to at least start weighing the options. But did anything strike you interesting from last night in the NBA? Because I'm just ready to get like round one over with, because I do think the conference semifinals will be good.
I think the Clippers win in Golden State was cute.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing we got out of it. That's a cute little win you got.
Yeah.
Like, let's settle down. I think that's a really impressive, without Embiid, to win big, even at home. I mean, I think that was a really good win by Philadelphia. I think the Embiid situation really puts a cap on what they can do. Like, I don't take them seriously anymore in terms of making a deep run, but I think they'll probably get past Brooklyn. And, you know, I think that Denver-Spurs series is a coin flip series, despite being a 2-7. I think you can throw the seeds out on that one. I think that could go either way.
Has it surprised you that Jamal Murray has struggled like he has?
I mean, I haven't watched that series, to be honest with you, because it's on NBA TV.
Yeah, I think two of the three have been on NBA TV.
Right. I'm not someone who, like, I think Jamal Murray's a good player. I'm not convinced he is a budding star.
Yeah.
I never really have been. And against a good defensive team like the Spurs, I don't find that particularly surprising, though.
All right, and then on to tonight. Toronto currently a 5.5-point favorite over Orlando. You and I basically, we said this yesterday, if you told me Toronto sweeps it out from here, I'm completely not surprised. And then to me, though, the two interesting games tonight, Boston-Indiana, right now, currently a 2.5-point line in favor of Indiana. Does it surprise you that they are favored even though they're at home?
I think that a little bit, yes. But I think Boston is still seems a little shaky, right?
Yes, I would agree.
I think the Pacers, this Pacers team is not good enough to win in the playoffs. And so Boston should really sort of, I mean, this should be a they're up 2-0, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So this should be a sweep or at worst a 5-game series. I just think that Boston's advantage in the series says more about the Pacers than the Celtics.
Yeah.
And so I think Boston still seems a little fragile.
Yeah. I mean, I said this on Eric's show yesterday, like if there's a possession where Indiana has to score and has to get a bucket, I have no confidence in them being able to do that.
Yeah, no. Without Oladipo, I mean they are their talent is below their seed.
All right, and then lastly on the playoffs tonight, Portland, Oklahoma City, Portland up 2-0, currently a 7.5-point line in favor of the Thunder. Vegas thinks that the Thunder are able to not only get back in it, like I don't know, like to me, I just feel like we're consistently overlooking Portland, myself included.
Yeah, I probably am. I think more so I overrated the Thunder. I think we're not going to get peak Westbrook and peak Paul George in these playoffs. I think if we had peak version of those two players, I think Thunder would win the series, but I don't think we're getting it. And so maybe you get the big rally at home, you know, down two games, coming back home. If they're going to win a game, it's going to need to be tonight. But I don't feel good anymore about the Thunder of the series.
Okay, over at Daily Memphian, over at DailyMemphian.com, we have the food fight: Los Picosos versus Los Camales. All right, let's set it up.
Yeah, that's the challenge.
I would consider myself a passionate consumer of Summer Avenue Mexican food. Which one should I go to if I can only pick one?
Well, this was not a food fight between the two restaurants. Broadly, it was strictly on the tacos,
okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I gave the win to Los Picosos. It was a split decision. The asada taco was better at Los Camales, but the pastor was better at Los Picosos. And then I did a wild card. I did, which may have been an unfair fight, but I did the carnitas versus, I'm going to mispronounce, the chicharron,
which is
the pork skin. The carnitas and the pastor tacos are so good at Los Picosos. There are things I like better at Los Camales in terms of, their garnishments and some other things. They have better tortillas, I think. It's a close call, but Los Picosos, you got to go try they do pork well, which is, a big thing in my book. But the thing about Los Picosos, this was about tacos, this column, but what they're really best at Los Picosos is smoked chicken. They do their own smoked chicken in-house, and it's not available all the time. You can go in and maybe they're doing it that day, maybe they're not. It's more that kind of thing, maybe more of a weekend thing. You got to go get the smoked chicken at Los Picosos. If that's not there, you got to do the pork tacos.
Yeah, I think when I go in between shows, I think lunch has just been decided. So thank you for that.
Yep, you're welcome.
Chris, we appreciate it as always, my man.
All right.
Thank you, my man. That is Chris Harrington, of course, of the Daily Memphian. Again, his food fight as well as his Grizzlies notebook is over up at DailyMemphian.com.
Summer Avenue is an exploration of food fulfillment that just can really take you on a special journey.
Yeah, we got a lot of range over there on Summer Avenue. You can go from, like, Chinese sub shop.
Great breakfast places. Bryant's.
You got Bryant's. Yep. You've got the pancake shop, or is it a house? I can't remember.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff.
Tremendous Mexican food. And then, of course, the always tasty KFC.
Yeah.
Always tasty. Yeah, I might have gone there on Sunday. Yeah, Sunday. When we come back, we'll discuss more of the NBA playoffs right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright. Well, you left my heart empty as a vessel.
As the introduction suggests, my name is indeed Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter at JWright929ESPN. The NBA playoffs roll on tonight. You're looking for a little of investment information.
Ooh, this is what we need. We need the gambling info, and we have the guy.
The Toronto Raptors are a four. They opened as a four-point favorite on the road at Orlando, now moved up to a 5.5-point line. 82% of bets are on the Raptors, according to the Action Network. 72% of the money, however, though, so there's at least a case to be made that Orlando has some value, particularly at 5.5 points. Here's an interesting one tonight, a game that you can hear right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Boston is currently a 2.5-point underdog against Indiana. There's an opportunity, though, according to the Action Network, to make money on an unpopular favorite. Of course, the unpopular favorite in this case being Indiana. So far,
I guess they're unpopular. Yeah, I mean, people want Boston to win, right?
So far, popular underdogs have been a bad bet in the playoffs since 2005. Those pooches getting more than 50% of bets have gone 198, 233, and 14 against the spread. That's 45.9%. Underdogs receiving 60% or more of spread tickets, like Oklahoma City has done, like they did the other night, 59, 93, and 5 against the spread. That's 38.8%. But on the flip side, you've got an unpopular favorite tonight being Indiana. And I think this makes total sense by the fact that it makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
So hang with me here.
Okay.
As Chris pointed out, Indiana does not have the firepower, and Boston still has elite offensive players, and they've certainly shown the ability to defend during this series, particularly given the fact that Indiana has apparently zero offensive firepower. With that being said, the fact that Indiana has looked so inept at times makes perfect sense that right now they're going to win this game, right?
Yeah, it's that reverse psychology thing. Listen, if Boston plays like they should play, I don't see how anybody in the East, even with them having injury concerns and stuff, like, I still like Boston. I really do.
It also should be noted that even though the Pacers are an unpopular favorite and most of the money has come in thus far on Boston, so far, though, the line now moved up to 2.5 points after opening two. So Vegas is moving the line because that would indicate that sharp bettors are all over Indiana. Also, teams that are down 0-2.
I don't get that. I don't get it at all. I'm still trying to figure out why.
I think it goes back to the age-old cliche, particularly in the NBA playoffs. Teams, role players play better when they're at home. So now they're going back home. Okay. And I mean, think about how inept the Grizzlies looked in the last playoff series against San Antonio. Those first two games in San Antonio, they come back, dominate Game 3, and then Game 4 was an absolute thriller, but that's really what it boils down to.
Well, looking at the West, this series I'm watching with the Clippers reminds me a little bit of the Grizzlies, not just because of the Patrick Beverley, Tony Allen comparison, but just how wild your emotions go. You go from like winning a game on the road, and the Grizzlies have seen this movie before, right?
Yes.
Whether it's they've seen it against the Clippers and they've seen it against Golden State, where you win a game on the road and you're like, hey, we're playing Golden State. We're tied one game to one game. Let's come back to Los Angeles or Memphis and win a game. And then you just get Kevin Durant going for 38 points and just destroying you. It's demoralizing.
Was it game four against the Warriors in the conference semifinals?
Yeah.
The Grizzlies.
You're thinking of what I'm
saying. They had the face game, the Mike Conley mask
breaks
game.
His face.
Game two, they win.
Yep.
Game three at home, they win.
Yep.
Game four was like, oh my God, like,
This could happen,
and at no point was that game even remotely competitive.
And then you lose that game, and then it's over.
Yes.
And the NBA is so weird like that. And then I look at the Portland-Oklahoma City series, which, you know, since we're talking about betting here, the over-under on that one's fun at 221, but Oklahoma City is supposed to come home now and win a game. They're favored. The line I'm seeing at ESPN is 7.5 on that.
Correct.
But, I mean, being down 2-0, I can totally see Oklahoma now just destroying Portland when they come home.
Only 49% of bets are on the Thunder right now. 63% of the money, though, so that's why you've seen even though
the line,
even though it's been an even, even though it's been an even number of tickets, the amount of money that's been bet has moved the line up.
You know this better than I do.
Has moved the line.
I can see this.
Has moved the line a point. So,
do you bet on the NBA? It seems like a tough bet.
Last night.
Did you do the Philadelphia Brooklyn game?
No, I did the Warriors. I did the and that's like this is I made hating the Warriors. Obviously, I wasn't on the station at this point, but I hated the Warriors well before it became fashionable to hate the Warriors.
Yeah.
And I will say, if you bet on the Warriors, and then all of a sudden they do that thing where they don't miss, It has its advantages.
It's sort of fun, yeah.
I can see where maybe that would catch on.
Yeah, I would bet on that series before I would bet on over in the East. I would bet on that series before I'd bet over in the East side, which is that Philadelphia-Brooklyn series, because it's even wilder because you've got Joel sitting out last night, and Philadelphia played pretty well.
Even though the line was 9, and some people are like, God, 9 on the road, that's a lot of points.
Talking about that Golden State
correct
game, yeah.
You had to think of it in this context.
Right.
The Warriors blew a 31-point lead in the second half because they just quit caring because they were dominating.
It's crazy.
It felt like the ultimate spot for the Warriors to come out last night and make a statement. And then you had Durant. You had the whole Durant-Beverly narrative going in which, Beverly owns Durant. And so then I was like, well, you get Kevin Durant motivated. He had a bunch of really chippy comments.
Yeah,
and I started thinking, I was like, think they're going to murder them on the road.
When he said, here's the beginning of that clip we were talking about.
Or by watching, and if so, what was your takeaway from the last game, you and the team?
Yep, I do break it down. Well, we had a nice Florida game. You know, let's go back to the whole last month of the season. We've been playing this way for a while. And when we got to this series, game one, we had some nice momentum. They're playing a gimmick defense, which has been working, top blocking everything on the perimeter. So guys not even looking at a three-point line. They're just forcing guys inside the three-point line. So for us, when I get the ball in my spots, you know, I got a pest, Patrick Beverly, who was up underneath me. Well, I could definitely shoot over top and score every time.
And when he said that yesterday, when he said, I can definitely shoot over the top and score like that at 40, I said, I think he's going to do that tonight. And sure enough, first quarter, he starts just pulling up.
Yeah, it turns out if you shoot, I want to make sure I say this exactly correct. If you get... First off, you get 38 points in 29 minutes. That seems, I think we can agree, that's an efficient offensive
unbelievable
performance.
Unbelievable, yeah.
But when you also shoot, like, basically that first quarter, like, he just didn't miss.
No, it was, and honestly, I understand trying to distribute because you've got Klay Thompson on one wing and you've got Steph Curry on the other wing and you're Kevin Durant and you're playing point guard and you can shoot over people, but you need to shoot over people. Like, you've got to shoot, if you've got a 17-footer, you got to pull up.
He had 38 and he missed 7 threes.
Yeah. And he should be shooting all of those. Like, he should be shooting all of those, even the misses. Like, you keep shooting.
It really is fascinating because Jeff asked this question to begin the show. Doesn't it seem like we spend more than any other player? I include LeBron.
Yeah. No, I thought that was a really good question about Durant.
It does feel like we, more than any other player in the league, we just look for, like, ways to knock him. Like, Giannis
is
better. Anthony Davis is better. Like, we actively look to knock him down a peg.
The question is then, why is that, right? And I think the why, if you think about it, is if you look at LeBron with his frame, he has a certain swagger and confidence about him. He really does. I mean, even though LeBron certainly has displayed some insecurities, just because of sort of how he is and how he operates with his circle, with the way he is, with his swagger, the way he plays, the way he looks, the videos he puts out, the way he demonstrates. Mm-hmm. He has swag. Mm-hmm. Now, he certainly has moments of vulnerability, but he has swag. Durant, on the other hand, every moment we see, not every moment, but many times when we see weaknesses from Kevin, they're really bad. Let's go down the list here. It's a fake burner account he's trying. Yeah, multiple burner accounts. Yeah. It's what we hear back-channeled from OKC from when we had him going to Golden State where he was like, This is why I'm doing it. And, you know, all of these insecurities, both behind the scenes.
Hijacking the 4th of July.
Hijacking the 4th of July. Going at people that are totally insignificant, not unlike his homie Russell Westbrook at times.
Yes.
For different reasons. So you get what I'm saying? And just the way he is, he sort of has this youthful, exuberant, aw shucks, vulnerability, but and sometimes not in a good way. And he's super defensive about it. And it's like, I think if Kevin Durant didn't have all of that angst and that the burner account stuff, and we would feel differently.
I think it's twofold. I do think there is that aspect of it, and then I also think you look at him, you're like, he's a 7-footer, he handles the ball like a guard, he shoots the ball unbelievably. Like, you think of him as like an offensive weapon, and it's similar to how some people feel about Marc Gasol. It's like, you feel like he should just dominate every single game offensively,
right?
And you don't feel like you see that. Like, game six, when he was in Oklahoma City, game six of the Western Conference Finals, they had the opportunity. They're leading in the fourth quarter. He can't make the plays to put the game away. And then the fashion in which, like, the idea of if you can't beat him, join him.
Right.
I think it feels cheap, and I think that goes to your point about the pettiness and whatnot. And so I think it makes him unlikable.
Yeah.
And so then when you're...
There's some unlikability to it, too. And it's not confidence. And like that quote we heard from Durant right there, it's the reason why it got so much traction, because John said on Jason and John's show yesterday, and we heard it during the six, we were doing this replay thing, and I was listening to it last night, where John's like, I wonder why that got so much traction. The reason why it gets traction is because we never hear Durant saying things like, I'm freaking Kevin Durant.
Yes.
And I think part of us wants to hear more of that.
I completely agree. Okay, one last note before we take a break and we tell you about a former SEC basketball coach that is headed to the Big Apple. Teams that are down 0-2 in the series in the NBA playoffs, they're 37-13 in those games. Good for a 38.7% return on investment.
Wow.
That is insane. They've won the first half by an average of 4.12 points. First half dogs in this situation have gone 19-8 for a 50.9% return. So that means make sure you take a close look tonight at Indiana. Make sure you take a close look also at Oklahoma City.
One more gambling question for Gambler Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. Would you bet on Oklahoma City to get this thing tied up 2-2?
Yes, because it makes absolutely no sense.
Right.
That's where it is right now.
I know I'm jumping right between conferences here.
No, because to me, Portland, like, Oklahoma City has not looked good.
Right.
And Portland,
and now it'll flip.
Right. And so now it just makes total sense that for it to flip. When we come back again, a former SEC basketball coach headed to the Big Apple. We'll tell you about that when we come back right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
Reach the portion of the show where you need to get to the one story you've been waiting for.
It's that time again on 92.9. Jeff and Jeffrey have kept you hanging long enough. It is, at long last, the one story you've been waiting for.
Former Arkansas head coach Mike Anderson has been hired as the next coach of St. John's, the school announced on Friday. Anderson will be introduced at a news conference at 12 Central today. He takes over a job that proved difficult to fill after Chris Mullen stepped down earlier this month. The school's first choice to replace Mullen was Arizona State coach Bobby Hurley, who decided to stay in Tempe. St. John's then pursued Loyola Chicago's Porter Moser. Moser turned down the Red Storm after visiting the Queens campus and having an interview. Iona's Tim Cluess then withdrew his name for consideration. Anderson, of course, was fired by Arkansas last month after 8 seasons as the Razorbacks head coach. St. John's has not been to a Sweet 16 since 1999.
Here's what's coming up next.
Jason and John, next. They will get you the latest on college basketball recruiting, the Grizzlies front office. Gary Parrish joins at 11:25. He'll discuss the St. John's job that everybody turned down. Trey Japer, who we talked about from IMG, 125. My man Jeffrey doing double duty this week with Eric out and ringing up, put three on the board. We got Dave Schilling, who's always fun at 325. Gary live for Good Friday at 4. Dan Wolkin at 420.
I got to get out of here. Make way for real talent. Jason, John, coming up next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.